What's up, everybody? Wednesday night. That means Bengal podcast time from the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. I'm Anthony Dezenza, joined by John on the move, Sheeran, moving bachelor pads, or I don't know what whatever it is.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How you doing, man? How you doing before the holiday here? I know moving is always stressful. We were talking about the joys of packing. Oh, God. How you doing otherwise, my friend?
Yeah, I think I want to poll our comments section. Just type anything that you think is like personally worse in your life. Like, don't get too serious, but like anything that's like mundane or something like inconvenience, anything in that realm that's worse than packing. Because I don't
the think DMV there is the DMV worse.
The DMV, yeah, like I feel like that could be an option if you feel so inclined. I don't think anything is beating packing, especially with Randall watching me do all the work and not putting in any of the effort. So this might be Randall's last show for a little bit because I don't know how he's going to fit in the new digs. We'll see how that setup is. So if you want to like a last glance at good old Rand back there, he's chilling out for at least tonight.
Yeah, Randall's got to start pulling his weight over there, man. He's got to help you out. That's not good.
It's been 3 years, man. I don't think anything's going to change.
Yeah. Well, good to be here in right before July 4th. Just an early happy holiday to everybody. Hopefully you enjoy yourself. Be safe. Have fun. All that good stuff. But we've got some things to talk about as it pertains with the Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC North. We've got a little bit of a discussion of the top 100 list that's coming out in about a month and a half or so. I believe it's when it's going to be unveiled on the NFL Network. And the reason being, there is some chatter by a prominent player about one of the Bengals' prominent players who we know is going to be on that list. So we'll talk about that a little bit. We have an interview, as we have been doing and been conducting over basically the past month, to complete the AFC North preview. We have Jeff Lloyd of the Locked On Browns podcast joining us. So that'll be fun. I mean, there's absolutely no drama going on with the Cleveland Browns, John. So nothing very, very uninteresting team. And then we'll do a little remember when and get on out of here. But as always, you can get the show on your favorite audio podcast platform, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major ones. We are there. And of course, if you like the video, right beneath John and by that SB Nation logo, there is an Orange and Black Insider podcast logo. You can click on that icon to subscribe. Click the bell to be notified when we go live, when new content is available. You also got to give a thumbs up on the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. 80,000+ of you like that bad boy. You can also catch the live streams on the Cincy Jungle Twitter account and our own Twitter account. So subscribe, like, do all the things you got to do to get access to this show, and we want to hear from you as well. So we, as always, appreciate the support. As we mentioned before, we get to Jeff Lloyd and the Locked On Browns look at that team as it pertains to the AFC North. John, a couple of LSU guys were in the headlines recently. Actually, like three of them were in the headlines recently because one was talking about one who's on the Bengals and then compared him to another LSU Tiger, and that is Tyrann Mathieu talking about Ja'Marr Chase and then later comparing him to OBJ. I guess let's kind of start with the fact that we know that Ja'Marr Chase is going to be on the top 100 list as a rookie, obviously an absolutely outstanding rookie campaign. But where do you think he lands, Ja'Marr Chase? And what did you think of that comparison to OBJ? I talked about it a little bit on the Happening Headlines, and I was kind of like, yeah, it's a compliment, but which OBJ are we talking about? Are we talking about early OBJ? Are we talking about now? I didn't quite know how to fully take that.
Well, I feel like with Mathieu, because I'm trying to think here, he was 2013, so he maybe 1 year.
Yeah, they played together, I think.
Yeah. So obviously he's got a soft spot and a little bias for him, but the entire NFL saw how, I don't think a lot of people remember just how dominant Odell Beckham Jr. was in like his first 3 years with the Giants. Eli Manning was good. He wasn't like this elite quarterback by any means. And OBJ was like averaging 1,500 yards and like 13 touchdowns a year for the first 3 years. He was easily one of the three, four best receivers in the league at that time. And you know, a lot of people remember that one-handed catch and just his hands in general. But his just explosion, his speed with the ball in his hands, like it was at a certain point unrivaled in the NFL. And I feel like that's the main takeaway that I think Tyron had with Chase when he played him the first time. He talked about like the first touchdown, the first of three touchdowns that Chase had in that game that clinched the AFC North. He quote, "I remember he caught a ball on us. It was like a 10-yard out. It was really just supposed to be a drive starter. He took it 80 yards to the crib. He outran everyone. He had like 200 at halftime. It was embarrassing." And then he started off saying, "I hate to compare people, but he's like Odell Beckham Jr. 2.0. And as someone who has seen OBJ's career start at LSU and then the entirety of it through New York and then through Cleveland and then winning a Super Bowl with the Rams, like he's obviously very intimately familiar with the skill set that OBJ had at his peak." And I think he just sees that in Chase. And he not only sees that, but he thinks he's a more advanced, enhanced version of him. I think he came into the league a little bit younger than Beckham did. He's, I think, a little bit bigger too, because Beckham was 5'11", 193, 195 coming into the league. Chase a little bit more dense. He's got maybe an inch on him in height. So yeah, I can definitely see the comparison for being that same explosive athlete with those strong hands, but also just being maybe more of a physical player that maintains that same insane acceleration and explosion. And Anthony, I just think it really will be a testament for not only Chase, but just the entire Bengals team to just earn that respect from guys like Matthew on really good teams because of how well the Bengals did. And that's going to be a much refreshing change compared to recent years when the Bengals weren't doing as well.
Big drought on the top 100 list for the Bengals for sure. Now, what was interesting, I believe on last year's top 100 list, the Bengals had a player that was coming to them in Trey Hendrickson that made the list, right? I think he was on that list a little bit towards the back end of it. But now you have it. Obviously, we've talked about Ja'Marr Chase making the list. You would assume that Joe Burrow is going to make the list. I'm thinking Trey Hendrickson's going to make it again, right? Because of his Pro Bowl type of campaign this year. DJ Reader, Chidobe Awuzie. I mean, how many are we thinking that are going to make this team? And are we going to make this a popularity contest? Which, by the way, now the Bengals popularity contest, their popularity has risen based on what they did last year. Still not to the level maybe where it should be or the respect level that it should be, but is it going to be that popularity contest, or are they going to look at the stats, the metrics, and kind of the pieces that this team amassed really over the past couple of years and see what they did last year?
So I do think multiple Bengals, at the bare minimum, you have Chase and Burrow making the list just because there's just immense respect around the league for those two guys. One did it as a rookie, one did it coming off of a horrific knee injury. Obviously immense respect. What people have to remember, though, is this list is compiled and these interviews are taken, I think, during the season, like no later than I think mid-December. So the majority of these votes and like the interviews are happening like the fall. So this was, I think, before, you know, the Bengals became like the favorites to win the division. They were still like 5-2 at one point. They beat the Ravens. They had like that mini, I guess, hype train in October. So maybe that will benefit them as well. But this is before they went on that postseason run. I think this is before they beat the Chiefs again. They beat the Titans and everything like that. I think with, I guess, Matthew, he was talking about like the week 16 or week 17 game. So, you know, it goes a little bit later to that. But yeah, I think with Hendrickson, just because he went back-to-back seasons with a high number of sacks, he beat a lot of high-quality tackles in order to do that. There's just the level of respect that I think the other players will have for a guy like that. And just in general, with how well the team was doing during the year, I think that will greatly impact, you know, how many of these guys make the list. Cause unfortunately it's only like 20 players who get on a given player's ballot, and rarely the 20 like truly best players in the NFL. So unfortunately there is a lot of popularity in it, but I think it does come down to ultimately respect. These are the best players in the NFL. They're only going to respect others who, I guess, put in the same amount of work and really make that same amount of impact. And just because you had Burrow and Chase really changing the course of these games and grinding out wins like that, that will earn them respect. To me, Anthony, the biggest ones that I'm questioning are like T. Higgins and Joe Mixon, because both of them have the production. Both of them made highlight reel plays. They had great performances in the Super Bowl. I don't know how much of that Super Bowl is going to matter. It should, but again, we don't know exactly when these votes are counted and if the playoffs will have an impact on that. So I think maybe fans are expecting like in the range of 5 to 6 players, and you know, we can make a case for them, but I think 2 to 3 to maybe 4 is this more safe projection. And that's just because this was the first year that the Bengals were really good. And maybe there are some players who are like, yeah, it was fun for 1 year, but let's see if they can do it again.
I think Mixon makes it on this list. I think just the production and, you know, for a lot of people around the league that aren't intimately familiar with the Bengals, you know, a player like that, if he gets on the list, they may highlight the resume and go, wow, yeah, this guy's had, you know, a lot of 1,000-yard seasons. He's actually a lot better receiver than a lot of people give him credit for. I don't know about Higgins because I don't, you know, are they going to put both the receivers on there? I just don't know. You know, I mean, there's cases to be made for, like I said, a lot of players. Awuzie's year was more predicated on, you know, PFF scores and different kind of more in-depth metrics as opposed to, you know, interception machine or what have you. So I don't know if players are going to recognize that. And, you know, the same goes for some other players as well on this team. You know, does Logan Wilson get a shot because of his year and especially early in the season? Does his injury hurt him? Kind of all depends. But yeah, I mean, I would assume that a guy like Joe Mixon at least would make this list based on the year he had last year. And then people just go, you know, they take notice and they say, you know, this guy's been quietly a good player just on some really bad teams.
To me, I'm really interested to see who is ranked higher between Chase and Burrow, because those are the two that we're most confident are going to make it. But just listening to what Matthew said about Chase, you have to feel like it's beyond just the LSU connection. There is a genuine high level of respect for what both of these guys did. One who didn't play last year coming out of college, one again who came back from injury. I think that is really going to elevate Burrow to a spot in this list where I think it's going to be higher than the general public expects, because obviously he played like a top 5 quarterback last year. But again, it was his first full season. It was his first really good year in the NFL. Maybe some people would try to pump the brakes and maybe not put him too high too early. But the fact that he did all of that behind that bad offensive line, those guys know the context of how impressive his season was with all the variables that he had to deal with. And I really think that's going to matter. Honestly, Anthony, I think he's going to be in like the top 30, like maybe top 25. And that might be a little high for some people, but.
You're saying Chase.
Burrow, sorry.
Burrow. Yeah. Okay. I don't disagree. I think he opened some eyes. And I think just based on the fact that what he did last year coming off of the injury. And I think a lot of people, while they say, you know, oh, obviously Chase, you know, really provided a new dimension and really kind of, you know, was a guy a little bit that Burrow leaned on. I'm telling you, I've been golfing with guys I just met, you know, like I go with one friend and some of their friends. And so we talk, and obviously I've got, you know, either a Bengal hat on or something going on. And I'm telling you, every single person is like, Joe Burrow, man,
yeah.
Joe Burrow, you know, it, so when, you know, the kind of, I don't want to call them the casual, but you know, a casual or another, not necessarily a Bengals fan, when they sit there and they recognize exactly all of what Burrow did and how this team seemed to just kind of get on his back late in the year, get in the playoffs. And then obviously it just came together more and more to get him to the Super Bowl. I don't disagree. I think he's going to be well within that top 50 and maybe a lot higher than a lot of people anticipate. But the big question, John, does Burrow outrank Justin Herbert on this list in your estimation?
I think he does, honestly.
I think he does.
Just like probably making the playoffs might matter to some of these guys too. But again, like I think they see more than just the things that obviously Herbert does better than Burrow, like the gifted athleticism and the strength and the arm power, like that matters. But I think to these guys, sometimes it leads to maybe not the best analysis, but in terms of like what counts for these votes, I think it is that level of respect and admiration for what a guy in his second year is doing. I think all of that context adds up to a ranking that is going to be higher than most, if not like 95% of the other quarterbacks. I do think he's higher than Herbert.
Yeah. So over under 4 Bengals on the top 100.
I'm going to Burrow, Chase, Hendrickson. I'm Mixon would probably be the fourth, and I'm not sure I'm going to put Mixon in there. I could easily make an argument for Awuzie, for Reader. I think they both have deserving cases. Higgins as well. I don't think, unfortunately, any of those three are going to make it. Mixon has the best chance out of the other options. I'm going to say under. I'm going to say three. It's going to be lower than most fans want or expect, but I think three is still fine based off of how they were last year.
Yeah, I might go push. I think that's right at the number there. That's why I said it. I think that number four is probably where it's going to be at. It wouldn't surprise me if maybe another one sneaks on there, but we will see. Again, we'll be covering that on Cincy Jungle as well, in terms of who makes that list and what people say, what the react, because there's also a reaction show, and we'll talk about all of that stuff on cincyjungle.com. So you got to keep it there for your news, opinions, analysis, and obviously your podcast. So that being said, we are going to bring in Jeff Lloyd from Locked On Bengals. You may see a little bit of a wardrobe change from John and myself. That's because, this wasn't done right now, but nevertheless, we enjoyed our chat with him, John. Good talk with Jeff Lloyd, and a guy that knows a lot of stuff, obviously, about the Browns, and just one of those great additions on the Locked On Network. So we will be playing this for you here. Enjoy. All right. So as we have teased over the better part of a week or so, and to help us wrap up our AFC North divisional preview, perhaps the most interesting team, the most intriguing team within the division, looking outward, which is saying something from the Cincinnati Bengals just coming off a Super Bowl berth. But the Cleveland Browns have a lot of things going on. They are a little bit of a mystery to some, and to help us unravel that mystery, we have Mr. Jeff Lloyd of the Locked On Browns podcast, part of that great network. Jeff, how you doing, man? Thanks for making the time and hanging out with us.
We're good. Thanks, John. Thanks, Anthony, for having me here. It's been weird, obviously, here, the way it's been constructed now for the last 2 months. I mean, as much as, any podcast, you'd literally just want to talk about your team and, the changes that have been made and, what you're looking forward to. I think most Browns fans, and I, myself included, my co-host Garrett Bush, it feels like we're kind of in a, it's like, all right, do we have a certain legal point we need to speak about in today's episode? Nobody wants to talk about it, but it's the elephant in the room. And, hopefully maybe Tuesday or sometime this week, we'll start to get some resolution to what exactly. And I think everybody kind of knows what's, nobody's blind. Everybody knows the situation. But I think it's just the point now where everybody would like to find out what the resolution is. What kind of time is Deshaun Watson going to miss? And this will be where we can now take our focus as far as covering this team.
Yeah, we've talked about it on our show in a couple of different types of episodes, whether it's our kind of whip around the league for some headline stuff, and obviously just kind of talking about things on our more our window and what it's kind of. It is the elephant in the room. You got to talk about it a little bit, I guess, with whatever, however much or little detail I guess you want to give with certain things going on. But obviously, your gut feeling on what this is looking like with Deshaun Watson, at least for this year. I mean, you heard things, maybe it's six games, maybe it's eight games. And now over the past few days and late last week, you were talking about, hearing about a substantial amount of time, potentially far more than that he could miss. I mean, what's your gut feeling? What's reading the tea leaves here? What is that looking like?
I don't think he's going to miss the entire 2022 season. I just don't. The way this is going to work on the NFL Players Association side is, look, they're going to say, yes, we understand he got paid last year, but he didn't play last year. So they're going to try to say and try to work for hey, there's some time served here. The NFL Players Association, and this is where it's going to be interesting, because J.C. Shredder, the former Cleveland Browns center, is now literally going to go stand there and bat for the current Cleveland Browns quarterback, who he has, minimal relationship with, other than, hey, we both play the NFL with each other from that regards. You look at Dan Snyder. How has an owner like Dan Snyder never been asked to walk away for a while? And this is things that the Players Association is going to bring up. I think the Players Association is going to go in this, hey, we understand that there is a suspension coming. But I think they are going to fight tooth and nail to understand that it is, it shouldn't be to the point of an entire season, because there have been incidents like this in the NFL and, you know, with some ownership, and the precedent wasn't set there. So why all of a sudden does, you know, Deshaun Watson, and look, this isn't a question for any of us thinking about, you know, judging these acts. It's not. It's about what the league views, how the league does business. And I think at the end of the day, the NFL would rather not see Deshaun Watson sit for a calendar year. The NFL is all about, you know, dollar signs. And, you know, Deshaun Watson being the quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, making the AFC North a better division. The AFC, obviously, there are so many eyes on the AFC and the potential of what this conference can do in the NFL with this season. I just don't see a way it's going to be an entire season. If you tell me it's going to be half, you tell me it may be 10, I think that can happen. I just don't see a way it's going to be all 17.
So I think it's fascinating, like the process of how like Watson came to be in Cleveland, because it was like the final four teams. And then there was another team along with Cleveland, I think, offered him or would have offered him the contract that he accepted. But at the end of the day, like there was a report from The Athletic that stated like he, you know, really hit it off with Stefanski, the front office, and he really liked the direction of where the roster is going. So in the scenario that Watson is suspended, let's say like 6 to 8 games, that 6 to 8 weeks where presumably Jacoby Brissett is the quarterback. And how do you feel about this iteration of the roster compared to last year, potentially, you know, having to play with a middling quarterback or quarterback that's not really going to enhance the team? Because unfortunately, that's what the Browns had to deal with last year, with when Baker Mayfield was hurt and he just wasn't himself, and they were still in the playoff race for basically the entire season.
Well, the first thing you would look at is, you know, and this is where I think Baker had his difficulties last year, and it's a little bit different for Baker Mayfield last year being the quarterback of this team, and maybe Jacoby Brissett having to do it for 6, 8, maybe 10 games this year. You can't tell a player of Baker Mayfield's ilk, where he was drafted number one overall, don't lose the game. You just don't speak that way to a guy who was a number one overall pick. Jacoby Brissett, it's a whole different ball of wax, obviously. The one thing you're going to say to Jacoby Brissett is, look at what we have on defense. 9 games last year, we held opponents to 16 points or less. So turnovers, it's crucial. We cannot have them. Even points that we left on the field last year, we went out, we drafted who we think was the best kicker in this draft. Just get the ball down the field, get us inside the 30. Obviously, we're hoping to score touchdowns, but we'll be okay with field goals. Just keep getting us positive drives. Jacoby Brissett, there was a stretch for the Indianapolis Colts where there was a time where it was 18 touchdowns and, you know, 4 interceptions over a certain amount of period. So he's capable of just moving the offense. Is he going to do anything close to what Deshaun Watson, they think he's going to do? No. Are you going to game plan a lot different? Are you going to call plays a lot different? I think another huge factor in all of this is Kareem Hunt didn't play 9 games last season for the Cleveland Browns. If Kareem Hunt plays those 9 games, I think the Browns do backdoor their way into the playoffs last year. He's such a valuable piece to this team as a receiver, as a runner, still here. You still have Nick Chubb. Not many changes on the offensive line. The wide receiver room, I think you've gotten to the point with the wide receiver room where it's the correct word, maybe it's drama-free, perhaps. And even Jarvis Landry, to his own fault, a lot of times he was the story when he didn't necessarily be the story. Amari Cooper is a much more unassuming guy. And let's put it this way, over the last couple of years of Odell Beckham Jr., of Jarvis Landry, of Amari Cooper, who was the best receiver on the field? It's a hand down. It's a no-brainer. It was Amari Cooper. Simple in that regards. So these are just things. But I really think that this is a team with the way they are built on the offensive line, with their running game, and with what this defense could be. Look, they are already 9 deep in the secondary before they even open camp. If you were a guy going to camp as a defensive back for the Cleveland Browns, you were hoping maybe you were the 10th defensive back. They are deep at linebacker. They're deep at defensive end. All the premium positions on the defensive side of the ball. This team is built defensively that they can sustain it. First 4 games are very winnable, regardless of who the quarterback of this team is. Then you get into that stretch after that first 4 where, you know, there's teams, Chargers, Patriots, that the Browns had issues with last year. But these games now will be in Cleveland this year. You have a lot of defensive players who have seen both of these teams previously. So maybe so much not new when you're going to go play these teams. This team is built to contend. They're built to maybe challenge for the division with Deshaun Watson, but they are built to contend either way for a wild card spot, regardless of who the quarterback is for maybe the first 10 games.
Talking with Jeff Lloyd of the Locked On Browns podcast does a great job on that podcast, as do the many, many hosts in that network. Happy to be chatting about the Cleveland Browns and previewing the finale of the AFC North here. I'm going to ask, you know, I want to talk about the receivers. I want to talk about the draft class. I want to talk about all kinds of different things if you've got time. But since I'm the resident dummy here, I'm going to ask the dumb question. Is there any reality that exists wherein Baker Mayfield is still a Brown this next year, maybe play snaps for him this year? If Deshaun Watson gets, you know, a mega suspension handed to him, you know, if they're all, obviously the trade partners have dwindled since after the draft and free agency and all that kind of stuff. I mean, is there any kind of scenario that you could foresee where Baker Mayfield is a Brown this year, take snaps for him, anything like that?
I think the easiest way to put this was, I think the three of us had the same odds of pulling the Mega Millions ticket, you know, tomorrow. Look, it's not a way it works. I mean, you know, and, you know, for all that went on and, you know, Baker's reaction and everybody, oh, I can't believe he's reacting this way. Well, you tell somebody, basically, you're not good enough. We think we can do better. And then Baker Mayfield saying, well, then trade me. Well, who wouldn't? I mean, who wouldn't? You basically told the guy to his face, here's a list of quarterbacks that we think are better than you. We're going to do everything we can to acquire them, and we'll figure out what our relationship is with you. I mean, there's no more over than that, you know, and I kind of equate it to, you know, the old line of dating when somebody suggests to the other one, maybe we should see other people, which means the person who suggested it either already has phone numbers or has already started seeing other people. It's over. It's a finality. That's the end of it. Why has it gone on this long? Baker Mayfield not being able to do anything this entire time. If you're a team like the Carolina Panthers or Seattle Seahawks, do you bring in Baker Mayfield injured, not going to do anything through OTAs, but meanwhile you have young guys working, saying, look, oh, we got faith in you, we want to see what you can do, but none of it matters because there's our quarterback, even though we can't do anything right now. I mean, look, it is as over can be, and for me it's difficult because, you know, the fact that the Browns are even a talking point right now is due a lot to what Baker Mayfield did in his play, maybe more in 18, certainly more in 2020. But as far as what he did to take this franchise from being the absolute laughingstock of the NFL and make them a relevant franchise. So, you know, I understand, and, you know, I'm not going to say in any way they upgraded their play at the quarterback position by bringing in Deshaun Watson. I'm not a fool, you know, but there is some difficulty. And nobody wants to basically be told, we think you're good, but you're not good enough. And that's essentially what this came down to.
I think it's a very interesting dynamic from a Bengals fan's perspective because I think there's a little bit of resentment about Baker because of how successful he's been against the Bengals specifically, but also it's like you see him against the 30 other teams, and it's like it's almost like it's a completely different person. From your perspective, like the last 3 years where Baker's 6-0 or whatever his record is against the Bengals, how was like you know, breaking that down compared to the other 90% of the Baker Mayfield games, this is the Brown games that you've seen in general, because it's not just Baker, it's the entire team that really pops off against this team right now.
Well, I mean, in 2018, this was a team that played extremely well. I mean, you went from 0-16 to 7-8-1. That is solid, solid play. I mean, that is a major turnaround for any team to go 0-16 to 7-8-1. 2020, and the weirdest thing about 2020 was, I mean, you know, you were talking at the time, there's no OTAs. Training camp due to COVID was so different. You know, when the Browns went out week one, went to Baltimore, and it went very, very poorly. But then he came back that Thursday night. The Bengals, their new franchise quarterback, Browns had a day. And there was the good of Baker Mayfield. There was the bad of Baker Mayfield. And I think as much as you guys are maybe viewing it versus the Bengals, I think it's maybe more of, you know, seasons. 2018, he was fantastic. 2020, he was really, really good to the point where there were a lot of metrics, whichever one you chose to use, Baker Mayfield played like a top 10 quarterback within the league. Did he do himself any favors last year playing injured? Certainly not. You know, is Baker always the kind of guy that, oh man, I threw an interception, and he would find a way to score 13 points on the next drive when everybody knows that's, you know, obviously inconceivable and there's no way to do it? but he would try to outplay what even he could do. Those are situations he certainly got himself into. But against the Bengals, I mean, this is, you know, one thing, and I even said it, you know, as, you know, last year, as your guys' playoff run went on, and it was, you know, well, how are, you know, now I guess we're measuring ourselves against the Cincinnati Bengals. Well, no, I mean, they match up really well. That's one team within the AFC North they don't really seem to have an issue with. They match up very well with the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll see if it holds true for the future here. But, you know, whether it was, you know, pass rush, whether it was, you know, the Bengals having a hard time with the Browns running game, or Baker Mayfield that week in Cincinnati last year, because that was one of the tough things. It was like, well, if you wanted to play the he's a hurt card, oh, well, he's hurt, well, he's hurt. There were a couple of games. The Chargers game was one last year. Certainly the Bengals game on the road against you last year. It was like, well, we can't use the he's hurt excuse every week, because there's weeks where he's played really well, and I'm sure he was just as in much pain. I'm sure the injury was still there. It was like he wasn't magically healed for 3.5 hours to go out and play the game. So that's what made it really, really, you know, difficult as far as trying to judge exactly the way he played last year. And then once the team got up against it, you know, he just tried to put everything on him. You know, sometimes there were drops. Okay, so he would try to make up for it by making up for it. He would make up for it with a couple of poor passes that led to even more interceptions. Just, you know, basically something went down a bad road, and he certainly didn't help the team from it getting any better. It just went further and further down the road.
Jeff, you hinted at some of the drama being removed from the wide receiver room earlier this year in variety of forms. I can remember covering the team. I started covering the team in 2011, where the Bengals themselves moved off of Chad and T.O. and transitioned into A.J. Green and a lot of mid-round picks, young guys, all that sort of thing. It kind of feels, not to the same degree, I guess, but there's a little bit of a similarity there that I'm reading with Cooper now in there, big name guy, first round pick, good player. And then you've got, you know, Schwartz and some draft picks and other Donovan Peoples-Jones who's splashed here and there. This has kind of been one of the major position groups in transition for the Browns. I mean, they're set in a lot of different areas. What's everything looking like here in the wide receiver group and with now kind of an influx quarterback situation as well?
Well, this was going to happen this year anyway. The majority of the major money of Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry was set to expire at the end of the 2021 season. So most likely major changes were coming. Donovan Peoples-Jones, he had a tremendous summer last year. And, you know, everybody, you know, once Odell missed the first couple of weeks and Jarvis, you know, unfortunately kind of dinged up and never was, you know, to be able to play like the player Jarvis Landry was, everybody just thought Donovan Peoples-Jones was going to go out and, you know, have this incredible year for being a former sixth round pick. We had 16 receptions as a rookie. Maybe that wasn't exactly, you know, an adequate, fair road to believe that Donovan Peoples-Jones was going to travel. Certainly the inefficiency, the injuries of Baker Mayfield certainly did not help Donovan Peoples-Jones in any way whatsoever. There was some time miss. You know, he got hurt before Thursday night game against the Denver Broncos. But he looks like, and even still, do I think we're talking about a player that could be, you know, that 900 yards? I don't think maybe he's going to be that guy. But he's a vertical threat, as obviously the Bengal fans know. This is what he does best. It's kind of interesting with Donovan. The one thing, and he tested extremely well throughout the draft process, they never found a way to get a three cone on him. Donovan Peoples-Jones, the shorter routes, it's just not where he excels. So there's kind of a card when you play against Donovan Peoples-Jones. You understand vertical is his thing. Now they've gone the other route. You bring in a tremendous player in Anthony Schwartz coming out of Auburn, missed a bunch of time as a rookie, but short, quick, deep speed. This type of player can do those type of things. David Bell has been a fantastic acquisition as a third round pick to this point. There is literally like Browns beat reporters trying to find at least one drop pass, even in just like a meaningless standstill drill to this point. And nobody has it. Didn't test as an elite athlete during the draft process. But 90 receptions last year, that was more production than guys who got drafted above him had their entire college career, not just their final year in college. David Bell seems to be a player that they seem really, really high on, does the dirty work, can run the underneath routes, the stuff you're looking for, third and five, third and four, third and six to move the chains. And Amari Cooper, it's just a very unassuming guy, not very much of a social media presence. Just going to come in. And for him now, gotten himself in a position where Dallas, there was a lot of talented guys. And for the Browns, it was, well, I can get him for a fifth round pick. We're going to convert most of that money into a signing bonus anyway, so it's not really going to affect our cap. Yeah, this is a guy to come in here, and it might be the perfect type of receiver who brings the same type of skill set, the same type of production expectations, but nothing that you got from an Odell Beckham Jr. or a Jarvis Landry. And this should bode well if and when Deshaun Watson gets to take a snap for the Browns, or with a player like Jacoby Brissett, who it's going to have to be a team effort to get success done. It's not going to be, I'm the quarterback, I threw it, you should have been there, that type of thing. Everybody's going to have to be lockstep for this passing game to work until Deshaun comes back.
Yeah, we need to find out if Amari Cooper also has a dad who's on Instagram, you know, just to be safe.
Likes to post videos. The wrong way, too.
Talking to Jeff Lloyd, who covers the Browns exquisitely on Locked On Browns. Check that out wherever you get your podcast. Jeff, you mentioned the defense earlier, very strategically, I might add, because you left out one position group that has been a talking point for the Browns in at least the past year. It is a really stacked defense everywhere else except defensive tackle. And I'm honestly just really curious as to what that plan has been like in terms of like a roster construction point. Like, what are the names that Browns fans are going to be counting on this year to, I guess, develop? Because unfortunately, it seems like it's just a bunch of young guys and a lot of question marks.
I think the one player, as far as, you know, somebody to maybe looking to step up in that room, it's got to be Tommy Togiai. He came with a lot of promise out of Ohio State. I think at the time, everybody was kind of surprised when he did declare out of Ohio State. Everybody kind of thought maybe, you know, look, there's a lot of guys on that defense. Maybe you needed to stick around for one more year to maybe, you know, become the man. And that's something most players need to do within college, because it's not usually something that develops within the NFL. Played sparingly as a rookie. There were some bright spots. But the Browns, this is a team that is predicated on speed and getting athletes on the field. Joe Woods, if he could, and they would probably let him, he would play probably nickel as his base defense. The Browns, you know, they're like, well, we'll get you linebackers that can play like safeties. That's why we got you Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa. They want to play the speed game. Will there be times where it's going to hurt them as far as, you know, short yarded situations if a player like Tommy Togiai doesn't step up? Yeah, it is. But I think what they're also thinking is, you know, the way we've constructed this offense based on Deshaun Watson being our quarterback for the foreseeable future, we're going to be in a lot more high scoring games. So it shouldn't come down to a third and one here or a fourth and goal here, because I think with their eyes, they're going to start playing games more similar to what we saw of the Bills and the Chiefs in the playoffs last year, where, you know, our offense is going to put up a ton of points. And, you know, if that's going to be the case and we feel we're going to be a winning team, we're going to be in the position where we can play nickel and dime a lot, where we're going to have to play nickel and dime a lot, because we're going to be playing with the lead and teams are going to be trying to chase us. Do I think they are done in that room? Maybe not. I don't think they're done. I've been guilty of this. So many people that cover the Browns have been guilty of this, trying to find this 325-pound, this 330-pound. Who's the guy that is, you know, basically the brick wall there in these situations? I'm done trying to do this, because obviously it's not something they are looking necessarily to do. Do I think they're done in that room yet? I probably don't think they're done in that room yet. But I don't think the name at the end of the day is all of a sudden going to say, that's it. The Browns all of a sudden address the defensive tackle room. After 6 years, we told everybody we've got the guy. I don't think it's going to work that way. Is somebody possibly going to come in? I think there's a good chance of that. I don't think it's going to be a groundbreaking move by any chance, though.
Jeff, I'm going to pull up the and hopefully you've got a couple more minutes, if you don't mind. I'm being not a nice guy and assuming that you're good on time. But if you need to jet, please let us know. This is from Browns Wire of the USA Today Network. This graphic here, the draft class here. We've talked about a couple of the the wide receivers and whatnot. I think one of the names that is intriguing there is Perrion Winfrey. I think some Bengals fans and pundits kind of picked him as a guy that maybe would have fit well with the Bengals. Obviously, the Browns had to wait a lot longer than a lot of other teams did to make some picks. But what did you make of the draft class? And you mentioned the kicker as well, Cade York. I guess, you know, we're so high on the Bengals and so high on things, everything they did, especially last year. I mean, is the Evan McPherson bug, do you think that played any kind of impact on the Browns and seeing what a young kicker did for that team? and the Browns maybe looking at that, saying, hey, we got to get a good young big leg kicker as well that can maybe win a couple of games at the last second for us.
I think that the thought process with a player like York is look, we've been trying this. We've been going the veteran route. Let's bring in a younger guy, somebody that we can groom, understand there could maybe be, you know, some hiccups coming out of the gate. But the other thing is, you know, the Browns had a ton of draft picks, and regardless of how they finished last year, there's not a lot of room for, there wasn't a lot of room for draft picks to make this team. So that was also part of it. So why don't you use a pick on a guy that you know is going to be a part of the team in 2022? Perrion Winfrey certainly is going to have his opportunities, but Perrion Winfrey, the one thing you saw of him at Oklahoma and the style that he played, he was much more of a player that could assist in pass rush. I think the Browns obviously are hoping for more out of him, that quick first step, the ability to, you know, basically drive through a gap between a, you know, a center and a guard can translate into helping with the run defense. The two of the picks that get me really, really excited are Alex Wright out of UAB and Isaiah Thomas out of Oklahoma State. Alex Wright never truly got to test, so we don't have much on him. The tape at UAB showed well. Isaiah Thomas tested really, really well. Both guys, 6'5", 270. Hey, guess what? Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, 6'5", 270. You know, size, athleticism, both these players bring that. I think Isaiah Thomas, even though he was drafted much later, might be the guy who could contribute a little bit more early, just due to the fact that Isaiah Thomas played better competition. He's more disciplined in the role as far as setting the edge, things you would expect, you know, from a second defensive end and, you know, first and 10, those type of situations. Jerome Ford is interesting because Jerome Ford, if you watch some of Cincinnati tape, you kind of get some Nick Chubb vibes. Because he was just one guy, and you would see open yardage, and it would be nothing special. It would be 110 miles an hour towards the open hole, and you know somebody there trying to juke him. So he was a solid player at Cincinnati in that respect. I mean, it's going to be interesting how it works because the Browns will have Nick Chubb, they will have Kareem Hunt, they have D'Ernest Johnson, they have Jerome Ford, they have Dimitri Felton. All these running backs going to camp. I don't know how it's going to work that they're going to be able to keep all of them, because even if you say Felton, oh, well, he plays some wide receiver, that's a deep room over there as well now, with some of the, you know, moves that were made within the draft So it's certainly interesting how it plays out. Winfrey, and the thing that you kind of like about Perrion Winfrey is he's got like the WWE attitude to him right now. He's the talker. He's got that type of style to him. You know, he's ready to go. You really hope it pans out. Otherwise, he's going to be a guy flapping his gums and nothing really comes out of it. And the thing with Martin Emerson is, with Martin Emerson, the first selection, and keep in mind, the Browns moved out of the second round all the way into the third round to make their first selection. You know, Denzel Ward, as much as he's a great cornerback, he's a little bit more on the smaller side. So when Denzel Ward tries to get physical, it sometimes ends up to Denzel Ward missing a little time. Martin Emerson is a guy that probably at some point in his career would end up at the safety position. He gets his nose dirty, loves to be physical, whether it's within coverage, whether it's within, you know, trying to fight off blocking, whether it's in run support. He's a fun player. And to think, you know, for the Browns, the first selection they made in this draft is the guy right now who's coming into camp as the fifth cornerback. Whatever you want to say about this team last year and the failures they had on the field, the roster is good. There is a lot of solid players on this team. Got to make it translate, though.
That's true. Jeff, final question from me to you would be, it's obviously rare for a quarterback of Watson's caliber to be moved and to change teams in the prime of his career. It's just that, like, when I think of the Browns, like, they're always synonymous for a lot of cap space and, unfortunately, questions at the quarterback. Beyond this year, both those things are the complete opposite, right? So now you have an elite quarterback in Watson who will presumably he will play in Cleveland at some point. And then you're looking at next year, you're tied up against the cap, and it's like that's a huge contract to kind of deal with. I guess from your perspective, now that you have that, there's the quarterback there, and like the team is in complete win now mode, and there's no, like, you know, more, you know, stacking assets and having all this cap space. How's that, like, transition, I guess, been for you and maybe for some other Browns fans that you kind of know?
Well, it is interesting. You know, the fact that, you know, this is now a team where we're talking about a whole bunch of high-priced players. But keep in mind, when you're talking about Denzel Ward, when you're talking about Nick Chubb, when you're talking about Myles Garrett, these are their players. So it's not like they went out, you know, brought in these, you know, free agents who are now high price free agents. And first thing you're going to look at, though, next year, Myles Garrett goes into year two of his contract extension. Next year, Nick Chubb goes into year two of his contract extension. So guess what? They're going to make $1 million and everything else there is going to be turned into signing bonuses. You're going to start going the way of the New Orleans Saints, you know, the old kick it down the road type of thing, you know, because they're going to have to do a lot of that. And this will depend, and this is where it kind of does get tricky with Deshaun Watson, because Deshaun Watson is on the cap for 2022 at $10 million. If it comes out and Deshaun Watson were suspended for all of 2022, guess what? Deshaun Watson is on the cap for 2023 at $10 million. So it will still be, it would be the same deal, which all of a sudden would put the Browns in a big, big, solid financial situation as far as having extra money in 2023. It's certainly, you know, different for the way it has worked out. But, you know, part of that is on, you know, the past regimes. You brought in good players and you did enough. And, you know, you did just enough with 2018, with 2020 to find a way for these players to want to commit and stick to Cleveland. And I think that's kind of a testament to what's gone on here as opposed to some other things. You know, I mean, with the season falling apart last year, Nick Chubb stayed, got extended. Wyatt Teller got extended. Joe Batonio signed yet another contract extension. You were able to just get Denzel Ward extended, you know, after the 2021 season was over. These players still believe. They still have a tremendous belief in what is going on. Granted, for some of these players, they didn't see much early in their career, so maybe finally seeing a sign of something positive, something that looks like it's sustainable, was enough. But, I mean, credit to them. A lot of these players could have said, look, you know, after, you know, 1 year good, 1 year bad, 1 year good, 1 year bad, you know, maybe I'll go somewhere else or I'm looking to get out. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, all these players seem to be satisfied being here.
I'm going to quickly piggyback off that to wrap up and then definitely want you to tell us about your show, Jeff. I guess expectations for this year, and that's kind of a good way to, I guess, wrap it in a way. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with Watson because of how many games he will or won't miss. Let's just say he kind of plays half the season. What's the expectations for the Browns, given that their roster is deep in a lot of different spots, with or without their starting quarterback in tow? What are your expectations for this year? And if it is a missed season, you know, are they still committed to Stefanski and the whole group here? If it's just kind of a, you know, a little bit of a short-term loss with this season?
See, for me, and I'll start here with that. You cannot look for at this season, and if Deshaun Watson ends up missing a critical amount of time, if all the time of the 2022 season, I don't know how you tell Andrew Berry or Kevin Stefanski they're done. Yeah, this is maybe a move they were interested in, but there is not a general manager in the NFL that can give away $238 million guaranteed without his owner saying, all right, let's go. You're not going to be able to give away 3 first-round picks without ownership signing off. So I don't know how, you know, look, you know, if it's really, really bad, you know, maybe Kevin Stefanski could be in the hot seat. But, you know, this was a move obviously everybody was on board with. And if anybody is surprised that Deshaun Watson's going to see some sort of, you know, significant suspension time, I don't believe anybody in that room is that naive. I don't believe anybody within those rooms is that foolish, except for maybe possibly an owner at times. But as far as the expectations, look, I mean, we're talking about a really, really solid defense. And yes, we can say, oh, well, defensive tackle doesn't look that great. That's fine. You know, the Browns can play, you know, go 7, 8, 9 deep in the defensive back. You have a player like Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who just started to scratch the surface last year. One of these players who is built like safety, runs like a safety, and can play linebacker. They can get to a point with Chase Winovich, with Jadeveon Clowney, with Myles Garrett, with one of the two rookies, where they can go NASCAR package anytime they choose and run a bunch of freakish athletes as pass rushers. I think wild card is, regardless of who the quarterback of this team is, wild card should be a solid and significant goal for this team. You look within the AFC North, obviously, you know, Cincinnati for right now, you know, riding the high. But you look at, you know, Pittsburgh, look, I mean, you know, everybody just assumes Kenny Pickett is going to come in and do what Ben Roethlisberger did for 17 years. Kenny Pickett, you know, grew up 20 minutes from me. God bless him. I hope he has a great NFL career, but we can't assume any of that. Then you also look at the Ravens, and whatever anybody wants to say about the Ravens, it's really, really strange that Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson at the stages of their career are right now sitting here in the same contractual spot. To say that that's going on right now, and look, the Ravens could say, oh, well, Lamar can sign his deal at any time he wants. Has anybody ever known anybody to not say, oh, sure, I'll sign the $250 to $300 million contract? I mean, until that you know that there is a future there beyond 2022 for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, it's kind of hard to believe that 2022 will go any better than 2021. Yes, the AFC is loaded. We'll see how it plays out. The Browns do get to play the Jets. We'll see where the Dolphins are at, those type of teams, as they get, you know, the AFC East, just like the Bengals do. But I think this is a team that is built to contend either way. I mean, are the aspirations and the goals higher for the more Deshaun Watson can play? There's no question about it. But if you're telling me that you can get Jacoby Brissett to do some of the good that Baker Mayfield did last year and just avoid the 2, 3, 4 interceptions on Christmas Day against the Green Bay Packers, a game even with 4 interceptions, they probably still could have won 2 or 3 different times. If you can just get him to play within himself, play within the system, hit the wide open play action throws that are going to be there, this is a team that should certainly win more games than they're going to lose.
He's Jeff Lloyd of the Locked on Browns podcast. I'm going to pull up the website here, obviously available on your favorite audio streamers and multiple platforms. Jeff, tell us a little bit about your show, obviously where people can find it, where they can find you and your work, all of it.
Well, I've been hosting Locked on Browns since the fall of 2017. Many people questioning my mental sanity at the time as I signed up to host a 8.6 football team. Then, you know, 2018 came around, the team, you know, obviously the entire state and thought process of the Cleveland Browns changed tremendously. The joys of 2020, every podcast, you know, where you get your favorite podcast, Locked on Browns available. Over the last 6 weeks, we have ventured into the YouTube area, you know, digital streaming. Everybody is, you know, this seems to be the way to go here now. We finally have, after almost 5+ years, added a co-host in Garrett Bush. Entrenched in Cleveland, works for 92.3, the Fan in Cleveland, part of the Older Than Cleveland Sports Show. And it's really, it's taken off to this point. And, you know, it's, for me, it's different because, you know, now I'm a little bit more of maybe the analyst of the show as I was, you know, always the host of the Locked on Browns podcast. But the growth of the show, the reception for everything that we're doing, it's just been tremendous to this point. Certainly looking forward to, you know, trips out to Ohio this football season. So it's been a hell of a ride, you know, to this point, and just seeing, you know, basically getting it to one place and then finding a way to get it even bigger to where it is. I can be followed at Jeff_LJ_Lloyd, at Locked on Browns for the podcast, on social medias, wherever you get your podcasts, of course, we're available there. And of course, on YouTube, it's been a hell of a ride. And I think the thing with the Browns is, it's been such an apples and oranges type of thing the last few years. You know, 18, great. 19, not so much. 20, which is essentially a Super Bowl season if you're a Cleveland Brown fan. And then all that going into 2021, and, ooh, here comes the heartbreak again. If anything, for Browns fans, if you're going by the, you know, up 1 year, down 1 year, 2022 looks like it should be pretty positive.
We'll see. We will definitely see. But thank you for your time, Jeff. We definitely appreciate it. Go check out the Locked on Browns podcast and appreciate all your time. I know we took a lot of it, but this was awesome. And thank you for educating us on all things Browns this season. And go check out the podcast, everybody. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. A lot of interesting nuggets there. And are you surprised about the optimism he holds there, John?
Not necessarily. I've known Jeff for a few years. He tends to look at things in a glass half full type of situation, but I can definitely understand it from the perspective of the Browns are objectively like a really good team. Like there's just no glaring holes on that roster. Obviously the optics of the Watson situation are terrible and like they should be addressed as such, but I think people have to reconcile with the fact that he will eventually play for the Cleveland Browns. And when he does, that team is going to be really good. And I think from a long-term perspective, that's plenty to be optimistic about from a pure football stance. And again, we can have the whole discussion about, you know, how good is it actually, but no, there's plenty, I think, of objectively solid football reasons to be excited if you are a fan of the Browns, and it just might have to take a year to eventually get to that point.
Yep. There's talent there. There's no doubt about it. It's always been, and they've had talented teams in the past. It's always just been about harnessing that talent and moving forward and being consistent. They just can't seem to get out of their own way in a lot of respects. And, you know, you don't want to say that's immediately going to happen here with the Watson Baker issue here. But, as we all know, that's not the greatest situation going on there. We're going to get out of here with a remember when quickly and drop the mic and get on out of here. John, I'm going to rewind for the remember when this week. I'm going to rewind back to the year 1996 with the Cincinnati Bengals, and I am going to talk about running backs. And obviously, the running back that everybody thinks I'm going to be talking about is their high pick from a year prior in Kajana Carter, who tore up his knee and was never quite the same with the Bengals. But I am not going to talk about Kajana Carter. I'm going to talk about a different guy. I'm going to show you a picture and see how many smart and longtime Bengals fans we have out there. Who is this guy, John? Do you know who that is?
Not a clue, actually. Torrey James, I know he was 20, but that's not the right uniform. So
Uniform and not the right year. No, that, sir, is Garrison Hurst. And Garrison Hurst is a guy who was a high-profile running back, a guy who was a number 3 overall pick with the then Phoenix and then turned into Arizona Cardinals team, lasted 3 years there, and they cut him in his rookie contract because of similar issues going on with Kajana Carter. Ineffectiveness, injuries, and obviously injuries leading to ineffectiveness, all of that. Although Garrison Hurst did have a 1,000-yard rushing season the year before joining the Bengals, but the year prior, I mean, it was like basically just over 100 yards total. It was just over about 400 yards or so rushing, and then three total touchdowns on the ground. I mean, just really wasn't the player that they expected coming out of Georgia, being one of the best players in college football. Well, the Bengals grabbed him on the cheap and kind of said, look, we've got some uncertainty here now with things going on with our supposedly star running back. And as you know, John, back then it was, you know, a 3,000-yard passing season was kind of like a big, big milestone. It was all about the running backs. It was use the running backs a lot. And here is what Garrison Hurst did. And so remember when Garrison Hurst, and if you don't, that's okay. But remember when Garrison Hurst was a Bengal, and I'm pulling up Pro Football Reference here. As kind of a backup guy, he did have just 3.8 yards per carry. That was Willie Anderson's rookie year, by the way, in 1996. But a respectable 847 yards there, basically almost a 1,000-yard from scrimmage season. You see their yards from scrimmage, 978. The weird thing, the big goose egg on the ground yet again for Garrison Hurst, and then one touchdown receiving, but was a very respectable weapon for the Cincinnati Bengals in that, and really a guy that they needed to step up because Kajana Carter was not really himself. And where did all of those rushing touchdowns go, John? Because the Bengals needed to justify that pick and make sure that they did not have egg on their face with the Kajana Carter pick. Let's look at his stats. Look at that. 8 touchdowns on the ground for Kajana Carter, who was relegated to goal line type of back. You see that 2.9 yards per attempt on the ground for Kajana Carter in his first year back from that injury. Obviously, Carter never was the same after that. Did have 7 touchdowns the year after as well. But just when you look at it, 1 game played, 3 games played, you know, it goes on and on. Still, what happened with Garrison Hurst and what he was able to do after that was pretty incredible. He was on those early 2000 teams with Jeff Garcia in San Francisco. Jeff Garcia, Terrell Owens, I think they still had Rice there for a couple of years at the end there. Those were very, very huge playoff, very exciting playoff type of teams. And Hurst was a major, major part of that. I think he had a 1,500-yard rushing season with San Francisco. Ended up down the road winning comeback player of the year. So he ended up kind of having a really nice resurgence. And really, it kind of started a little bit. He had a pretty decent year the year before with the Cardinals, but it kind of kickstarted things. And Cincinnati is the backup, quote unquote, to Kajana Carter, even though he was the guy that kind of did the work in between the 20s, and Kajana Carter did the rest from there. So Garrison Hurst, a guy that was only with the team for a year, but a guy that was an exciting player during a pretty dismal season overall.
Garrison Hurst, phenomenal name. I will say, like, A-plus name.
Yeah, that's like strong guy name, right?
Like, that's the name that I would picture someone like finishing drives with eight touchdowns and 9 carries, to be honest with you. But yeah, I've never heard of that name before. But as you pulled up, like, he was really productive out, like, as well with other teams outside of his 1 year with Cincinnati. Like, that's crazy though, because at least seeing both his and Carter's stats, I think did they combine for like 400 or almost 500 rushing attempts or something like that? They were both Carter was 91, but still, like, 220 or 250 rush attempts for Garrison Hurst, not a single rushing touchdown, is a pretty remarkable feat to be sure. But yeah, that's quite the find right there.
Yeah, and here's the just to show it again real quick, here's what I was talking about. You see the 1070 on the ground, but then look at what he did with San Francisco, man. It was 1,019, four touchdowns, and he was really – look at this season. 2,100 yards from scrimmage, man. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, that's just crazy. And then he had this weird avascular necrosis thing going on. I think it was from an old injury type of deal, and it set him back for 2 years. He didn't play football for 2 years. Comes back in 2001 and has a 1,200-yard season on the ground with San Francisco. I mean, that's ridiculous.
He's an unsung hero. Like, yeah, honestly, I feel like no one knows about him.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing with his career. I mean, I think he was a guy I was thinking back. I'm like, did he win the Heisman? Because he was outstanding. And I'm looking, and I don't think he won the Heisman that year because he got overlooked. And so then he ended up parlaying this season with Cincinnati into one with San Francisco, or into a few with San Francisco, where he won the Comeback Player of the Year and everything. So remember when Garrison Hurst was a Bengal? And it's okay if you don't, because it was a while ago. It was for one season, and it was a pretty decent one.
Yeah, it was. I think it was 5 months old when that was happening. So yeah, don't remember that, but I will add it to my notebook that is continuing to grow every single week that we have these remember wins. I hope that you're not going to quiz me though, because
I will not.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I will not. Well, let's drop the mic and get out of here, man. What do you got for us?
Nothing much. I read a pretty good article, though, on Yahoo Sports today. It was written by Shalice Manza-Young, and it was about Joe Burrow kind of going against the grain compared to other NFL quarterbacks, specifically just being a white athlete in general. And yeah, I just think it's interesting in the past month or so when Burrow's made comments or has posted certain things, and he's getting a lot of praise for doing so. And also, to me, it just feels like, I don't know, it's a weird balance between recognizing him more or less doing the bare minimum upon talking or sharing things regarding certain issues, certain social issues. But at the same time, for someone in his position where there's potentially a lot on the line in terms of like the value of his word and also the position, the platform that he has, it's almost like there's a different standard, there's a different bar that those athletes and those people just have to, I guess, reach in order to be deemed as someone who's doing a lot. And I think it's an interesting dynamic. It's an interesting discussion. And you know, if you're interested in maybe a fresh perspective compared to your own, I would definitely check out the article on Yahoo Sports. It's titled "Joe Burrow Continues to Speak Out on Important Issues Unlike His NFL Quarterback Contemporaries." I think it's definitely interesting if you want to check it out. And yeah, I think it puts into a good perspective on something that I've been thinking about, but have had a hard time kind of putting into words. So I would definitely recommend reading that.
Yeah, good find. I did not see that, so I will have to check that out for sure. That sounds very interesting, and yeah, good find there. I don't have much, except for that we have a couple of forthcoming announcements that will be unveiled here in the near future. Guests and all kinds of different things in which we have been working on. I know this part of the season is, you know, a little slower just because, you know, the on-field work isn't as, isn't as much, and the games aren't being played, and playoffs and are way out of the, you know, all kinds of stuff, draft, all that stuff is in the rearview mirror. But we appreciate you sticking with us, and we've got some, we're trying to get creative in terms of guests and different things that we're doing. So we can't exactly drop everything and let you know yet, but just know that we've got a lot of different things in the works that we feel that could be pretty exciting for this show and the website and all kinds of different things. So that's really all I have. And John, best of luck with the move, my friend. I know you're doing this to kick off your holiday weekend here, so to speak, but I hope you get time. I hope you knock it out quickly, and I hope you are able to have some fun. Find time to have some fun.
I will definitely make some time after Friday. I don't want to see a box, honestly. that will happen.
Packing is the worst. Packing in the DMV. That's what we've considered to be the worst there, for sure. Have a good weekend, John, and we will talk to everybody very soon. Take care. Have a happy and safe July 4th, everybody.